You are listening to Wait a Minute with Beth and Jessica,
episode 74. I'm Jessica Pearson, certified life coach.
And I'm Beth Barnett Babel, integrative nutrition therapist. We keep our eyes peeled for things in the media or in real life that come from diet culture or that perpetuate diet culture in some way. These are often the subtle ways it creeps in, which is why we are shining a light on it and sharing it with you.
Yeah. So we watched the Oprah special, which was called Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution.
Yeah. I was only able to catch the second half because I watched it, get this, on live TV. Live.
Yeah, imagine that. I did a poll on Instagram to be like, has anybody else watched it? And it was like 100% no. So I thought it was interesting because Oprah seems significant to me, but I'm 43 and I wondered if people younger than us care who Oprah is.
Yeah, I was like, yes, Oprah's back on TV. Everything feels right in the world.
Yeah, like in reality, she hasn't really hosted much or been on TV. Like she has her magazine and, you know, she's been on the board of Weight Watchers. So she's been in the weight loss and diet culture space for a while. But you got to like already love Oprah to kind of be in her world. And so I thought it was interesting to think like, what if it's just like our moms or like people our age watching this special? Like, is anybody younger watching it or care? That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah. I tuned in. And it was very frustrating watching live TV because
of the commercials.
And you can't skip them. And it was, oh my God. That was like the biggest thing for me was there was a 2.5 minute talking segment and then 7 minutes of commercials. Like the ratio of information to commercials was very skewed. And I found that to be really frustrating because couldn't get deep into any of the topics.
No, that's the state of television. I don't know if you watch any regular television, but that's just how it goes, right? It's all advertising. And then, yeah, I felt like she had all of these people on, which we'll get into in a second, but they were such quick segments. Like it was kind of fluffy, kind of surface.
And that's frustrating because the way it used to go was there would be like, you know, longer segments and shorter commercials. And then as it went on closer to the end of the hour mark, the commercials would get closer together. Yeah. But the first chunk was always like lots of really good, juicy, in-depth, longer time before it would cut to commercial, but
yeah,
that's not allowed anymore.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for maybe like Diane Sawyer level heavy hitting questions and really getting to the root of some of this stuff, and that just didn't really happen for me. But let's talk about it. So it starts at the top with Oprah introducing the shame that she took on from the media and the people starting, I can't remember when that article came out, but it was like in the 80s when they took photos from her show where maybe she was at her top weight. She was about, you know, I don't know, it was like in the high 200s and they tore her apart. And what was crazy is I remember we all kind of believed it. We were like, wow, Oprah is big. And like the diet culture was really thick and heavy in the 80s and 90s. And Oprah was the victim of this message. So she opened this, you know, special with being like, I was this victim and I took on the shame. And I'm here to say like, we're done with shaming and blaming, which I thought was a good message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that part of it, I did feel like it was a good message. I can't get over like how like I really just wanted it to be so much more in depth. And it did remind me of that shame and blame part of an episode of James Corden.
Uh-huh.
And so he did an episode like a monologue when he had his show because Bill Maher like really ripped into people on obesity and things like that. And he was like, you know, because Bill Maher was like, well, let's get back to shaming people and, you know, doing all this other thing. And James Corden was like, well, if that worked, don't you think we would have all solved this problem by now? Because that's what we've all done is shame ourselves and feel the shame and blame ourselves. But yet here we still are at this size. So that part of it reminded me so much of still that very powerful segment for me.
Yeah. And as we dive into this, I think part of one of my other takeaways too was this was a lot about like, let's stop shaming and blaming people, but also let's change our bodies to become so that we're not the subject of people's jokes anymore. Like, I don't know, it was just interesting because I was like, well, I understand wanting to change your body and everything, but it was just kind of a weird mixed message of like, well, we're going to show you by getting thin. And I was like, wait, that's not exactly maybe the message we want to share. But some of these kind of underlying messages that weren't not necessarily overtly discussed that I was like, wait a second.
Yeah. So it was almost like you mean like the title didn't quite match with what the topic was, because the topic was clearly about GLP-1 medications.
Correct. It could have just been like, let's stop shaming and blaming people in bigger bodies, period. That could have been the whole segment. But instead it was like, and by the way, people with bigger bodies, there's this new weight loss revolution of these GLP-1 drugs, which then she just talks all about and shares with everybody. And she tried to share it in a way that seemed like, we're going to talk about all the size of things. But when she opened up some questions, like they were either side skirted or completely avoided together or just flat out, honestly, felt like lies. So I was just like, so let's dig into it. So the first segment was a woman who shared her story. It was very vulnerable to feel the sadness that they're experiencing from having a bigger body their whole life. She talked about her just being in such a dark place. Her marriage was hanging on by a thread. Her dad had died, and then she had kids like during COVID and just like all this stuff, all these circumstances. She finally got to about 300 pounds where she was then diagnosed with diabetes, and she just felt hopeless, like she could not change a thing. And then her doctor put her on Mounjaro. And it was just interesting because she did explain, she said the food voice is gone. Like, I still want a bagel, but I'm not like constantly thinking about the bagel, which I do think that is an awesome benefit that we can talk about in a minute too. Mm-hmm. So the food voice changed for her, which felt like she was free from a trap. And she was honest about her quick weight loss. And I think people in their mind think, oh, if I lose 100 pounds, my body's going to look a certain way. But the realities of that, especially when you're losing it quickly, is like, yeah, you're going to have some extra loose skin. And it's not necessarily like you're going to become a bikini model from losing weight. And so she was open about that and honest. And she even said, at first, I thought I didn't like it, but now it feels like a badge of honor. And the one thing that she said that kind of struck me was she noticed that being in a bigger body is just like the way that people treat you. And now that she's in a smaller body, it's not just the way people treat her, but the way that they treat her kids. Like, people are nicer to not just her, but to her whole family. And that really like hit home for her. And it is sad. And then I just thought, like, I don't know, I had some thoughts about it that I can't even articulate right now.
Yeah. Like, there's just modern times. I can't get over that. Like, we just get so bent out of shape that people are a different size body and a different color. So the size of your body and the color of your body, like, it's like the 1920s, like, just won't end. It's ridiculous.
It's hard to be like, this is the reality. People do treat people in bigger bodies and different color bodies very differently. And it's like, that is so messed up. And yet, I guess part of my, maybe it is a judgment, is like, well, then why are we trying to shrink our bodies to appease these losers who are trying to judge us, right? Versus like, why can't we just change their narrative? But then there's also, yes, she has diabetes and has health issues. So like, yes, there is a weight loss component to it that is attached to her health. And like, we can't deny that factor.
Right. Yeah. So like, those parts are there. And that's where, you know, it just gets a little bit messy.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was interesting because they did mention there's people that can lose weight with diet and exercise, and then there's people that can't. Like, your body has become your functions, your hormones, your organs have become dysregulated to the point where they're no longer functioning the way that they should be. But what was interesting is they didn't really like dive deeper into that. That was just like a quick, like, by the way, there's people that can't do diet and exercise, like, this is a disease. And then they kind of moved on from that. So I don't know if you have any.
I mean, are you asking like, what is the disease, or my thoughts on them just glossing over it?
Kind of the thoughts of glossing over it, because I feel like that should be a bigger discussion of like, well, why is that the case? Like, yeah, okay, if obesity is a disease that our brain, they did explain, they're like, your brain regulates your, you know, body fat, and obesity is a dysfunction of this system. Mm-hmm. Your body is always seeking homeostasis and is always trying to find its set point. And some people do have higher set points. So if you are dieting and exercising, like, it is an uphill battle. And we know that. And, you know, we understand that. But then it's like, where is the line between someone who really, really would benefit from this medicine versus like someone who couldn't do it on their own? I don't know. They didn't really talk about that.
Yeah, I think that goes to the whole show is that it was all very surface level and none of it was given the time that it needed to give, because I think that people really do need to understand, well, why is it this the case? Like, why is there dis-ease in our bodies? And so the bodies are responding to something in the environment of there being something wrong. So the body is doing what it's supposed to be doing in the face of the inputs. And some people are genetically more prone to that. And there seems to be some old evolutionary things that happen to go along with that. But I also can't get past the fact, I think that you do mention this, that they talked about very briefly about the food and how it's altering our gut microbiome. Because if you look back to the 1970s or even the early 1980s, yes, there was overweight and obesity, but not to the level that there is now. And so it's like, well, why is that? It's because everything keeps changing. Our food supply has changed from the soil up. Right. And so all of that is affecting us. And so then our body is in turn responding in a way that's saying something is not right here.
Yeah. Yeah. The doctor that they had on the special, it was literally one sentence as he was explaining what GLP-1 is and how our bodies regulate our fat mass, et cetera. He said so briefly, like, yes, your gut health matters. And, you know, he mentioned processed foods and how it changes gut microbiome. And I really wish that they would have spent more than one sentence on this.
Yeah.
And then also it was frustrating because I thought, yeah, I mean, it is processed foods, but like, and this is a whole other podcast, but like you said, it's our soil, right?
It's a lot has to do with our soils and everything in the fertilizers and pesticides that they're putting on, because what they have shown is that the glyphosates that they put on the foods, the way that it works is that it actually kills out the bacteria. And so what happens when we consume them is that it acts as an antibiotic of sorts and kills out our bacteria.
Yeah. So you're messing with our microbiome, but it's not just people who are, yes, like I would think eating poorly and consuming a higher dose of processed foods is going to get you there faster, more than likely. But there's other factors, like we've talked about, like genetics and this other stuff. But even people who are trying to eat pretty well, this is affecting us. And it's not just the soil. I was thinking about like our water supply and like the amount of prescription drugs that are not getting filtered out of our water supply, the amount of endocrine disruptors and,
all, you know, the plastics and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything in the products that we use, the things we put not just in our body, but on our body, and how that adds up and can turn on these genetic receptors to this situation. So I don't know. I feel like obviously they did not talk about any of that, which was more than frustrating. I was like screaming into the abyss, like, wait, what about this? And then they did ask, what is obesity as a disease? Which I thought was the best question. And, you know, the doctor was just like, well, it's not really one disease. It's a complex thing to discuss because it's really many diseases under the umbrella of obesity, right? So then it's like, oh, well, so are we considering fatty liver obesity disease? They didn't really dive deep into that either. And I haven't heard like a direct answer for that. Have you?
I mean, the way that I think about it, which was described in this really fascinating, I know it sounds so nerdy, fascinating functional cardiovascular textbook that I read.
We're so glad that you read these. This is what we need. We need somebody to read these things. So thank you.
And so it's like, well, name the input, but the end result is more or less the same. And you have this, and this is the cluster that shows up.
Yeah. Yeah. So they really wanted to emphasize, like, this is not self-inflicted. This is not your fault. This is not a matter of willpower. To which I mostly agree, right? I mean, obviously, I do think we have to take some personal responsibility for the way that we're eating and how we're showing up in the world. But I can see how when it starts in childhood and this is the way that you're raised and then your body is set off. Yeah, it's not really our fault. And then to our point, which is even if you are eating well based on environmental factors, this could still end up your journey, right? So it is not entirely self-inflicted. And so if we go to this, if we 100% agree with this, that it's not self-inflicted, then who is inflicting it, right? It's like, right. Oh, it is our food sources. It is the big pharma industry. It is our government. And like, maybe they should be the ones cutting the checks for everybody to get on this medication because it's gotten so bad that this is the answer now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I do think that the solution is coming from the big, from the pharmaceutical company. Great. I'm glad that they came up with these drugs, especially for when they originally were for people with insulin issues. And, you know, I'm glad that they found that it works in this other way because the leptin drugs that they thought would be a miracle drug didn't work out. And so I'm glad that they are finding things that are helpful. But let's get back to that one gloss over statement, which is this is because we are unwilling to hold companies making money accountable because we live in this quote unquote free market society and we can all make our own freaking choices. But that's wrong. Like we're just saying, well, we care about our corporations about the people.
When you bang on the desk, it's making your voice.
Sorry. Yeah. It's like, it makes me so mad because it's like, we are telling our people that we care more about the profits and the yacht and all these things, that we care more about that guy's money and shareholders' profits than we care about our own citizens of our country.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason why we have evidence to believe that is because in the UK and in Japan and other countries, these companies are not allowed to put those ingredients in those foods. And you know what they do? They reformulate them to have less ingredients in them, less preservatives, less dyes. They comply with their regulations. But here we're like, well, they don't make us do it, so we're going to continue to do this and then blame it on you that, well, you should be able to control yourself to not eat this thing. But we're going to price it at a point where you have to eat this because everything else is so expensive because this is all subsidized.
Yeah. I know I wanted to do like a graphic of like, you know, like follow the money and see where the legislation is going because, you know, we don't want to, you know, out ourselves as conspiracy theorists. But at this point, it's not a conspiracy.
It's not a conspiracy. Like- and the thing is like these medications are very expensive. And so now we're paying twice.
Totally. That's why I was like, you should be getting paid to take this medicine because it's their fault. It's not your fault at this point. It is like, oh, so they're going to make you obese. They're going to make you sick. And then they're going to sell you the drug to fix it. Like that's where we're at right now. And that's why I walked away from this special feeling so sad about the state of our humanity and just like our cultural health. Like this is what it's come to. And this is who's in charge. Like we have to figure something out.
Yeah.
Or like, I was like, is this it? Like, is this just part of the end of the world? And we just all have to accept it for what it is. Like, I don't know what to do. Like move out of the country.
If you follow every place that adopts our food supply, what happens?
They get sick.
Yeah. Cancer rises, obesity rises, diabetes rises. It all rises whenever our corporations go into these new markets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's why I kind of was mad at Oprah a little bit because I was like, Oprah, how do you not see this? And I'm like, oh, then she does see it and she's a part of it and she's getting paid to be a part of it. And now I'm sicker. Like, I don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
So I will say they did say like, please take this drug with help. Like, do not just go to your eyelash girl and get this prescribed to you because there's an overseeing medical doctor at your med spa. Like, please go talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about so they can at least do some lab work.
Yeah.
And see how things are going. You know, she did make a comparison of like, you wouldn't just go and buy chemo off the shelf and start taking it if you had cancer. You probably would want somebody to supervise you. So I was like, okay, well, I'm glad that was said at least. And then they did ask like, is this a drug you're going to have to take for life? And they straight up said yes. They said the research shows that the disease returns when you get off the medicine. So if it's working for you, it's working. And guess what? You're going to take it for life. So that was kind of like, oh, I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I'm just like, well, I mean, but what if someone were able to quiet the voice long enough to be able to retrain their brain, get their guts back into functioning order to drastically reduce or be able to support their foods coming from a place that supports a normal gut functioning? I mean, I would think that that would be possible.
I mean, that would be the hope, right? But that's also assuming that people are changing their habits while also on this drug. Because, oh, it's taking the food notes away. So maybe you go from binging on something to having less of it. But are you also eating like high nutrient density foods, high fiber foods? Are you eating anything that's going to help support that gut function? Or are you just eating less of the stuff that you were eating before?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Okay, so this next guest that they had on, her name's Maggie. She like kind of went viral because I think she was on TikTok, and then they did an article in The Cut on her. And so she was 11 years old when she reached 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. And the way she described it is she said, I never felt full. And her parents had described that even as a toddler, like they noticed that she was consuming too much food. Too much in quotes, like, you know, but for them, they're like, wow, she ate like a whole pork chop, you know, and like she was too. So they noticed that her intake was above average and she had been putting on weight. And she actually was also very active. Like they said, she did every sport, she did all these things, and like it just was not working for her. And so at 13, they decided, this is what they glossed over though. She had bariatric surgery, and the mom was like so nervous, anxious, horrified by the bariatric surgery. But they never mentioned, like, how did that turn out on its own?
Oh, I did hear it, and it was a very fast statement. She didn't get the results that they were expecting, which is why they then put her on the GLP-1. Yeah. It was just a real fast, like, transition statement. Yeah. But she had the bariatric surgery, and because she didn't get the typical results, which is why they then put her on the GLP-1.
Yeah. So they put her on Victoza, which is one of the only ones that is, what do you call, like certified or
approved, you
know, approved for children. And then she did. She went on to lose 108 pounds specifically. And the mom, I know she mentioned she's paying out of pocket for this, but the mom described her results as like a butterfly coming out of the cocoon, and like her whole life changed. And now she's a cheerleader and she's happy and feeling normal. And so like, of course, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But to go to this and to the woman before who said, like, my marriage is struggling and everything, like, I really want follow-up. Their mental health, and like, are all of the problems solved? Or are the problems going to come back to haunt us later down the road because we never really dealt with some of this other stuff? Like, I don't want to discount anyone's wins. Like, I want to celebrate the good things that are happening for people. I genuinely do. And I'm like, what else? I feel like, you know, of course they're not going to share the downs. So I'm just skeptical, I guess.
That it, like, everything became sunshine and rainbows?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe it was for her because she's so young, but, like, is it really sunshine and rainbows for this, you know, mid-30s woman whose marriage was struggling? Like, did it save her marriage? Like, I want to know.
It is interesting to kind of think about that because it goes back to, well, why are we appeasing the people that didn't like us when we were fat?
Yeah, because she's like, oh, and I'm going to prom for the first time. Yay. But I was like, what is this message to girls that, like, oh, you're not going to go to prom if you're in a bigger body? Like, you don't, no one's going to ask you. You don't get to go have fun. And, like, what if your family can't afford this medicine? I don't know. I mean, so it's just kind of like, oh, I don't want to take away from the people that are getting great results and enjoying their life. But also, is this not kind of also harming even more the people that don't have access to this?
I mean, it's complicated. I mean, there is no right answer. There's no right, really, thing to say.
Yeah.
In that, because it's so nuanced. And yet not. Because can you just not poison us?
100%, yes.
Could we just go to that? Could we just not be poisoned by the things that we need in order to survive? Let's do that.
I was, like, in yoga yesterday just thinking about, like, it's just getting harder and harder to be healthy. Like, to fight your best fight. And then last night I went on this wormhole of this man that I was texting Beth about, because this man spends $2 million a year just on his health. And he doesn't sound like fun at all to me.
He doesn't sound fun. Yeah, he's saying he wants to do all the longevity experiments on himself for others because he's interested in it and he can. But I'm like...
But I was like, what does this say? It takes $2 million a year to fight for your health. You know, I was like, this just feels like the disparity, the gap is widening of like the people who can afford health and the people that can't. Not,
yeah.
And that's really, that's upsetting to me in a lot of ways. So the CEO of Weight Watchers came on, and Oprah, as we know, was on the board of Weight Watchers, to which she just resigned like a few days before this special came out. And she said, it's because I didn't want to have any conflict of interest with what I'm about to say in the special. So that's why I resigned. But then I was like, well, what does that really mean? Because she seems in alignment, but maybe that's what she means, is she doesn't want people to think that Weight Watchers paid her to say this. Like, I don't know. But she asked Weight Watchers, like, so why do we need Weight Watchers anymore if we have these medicines? Which I thought was a great question. I was like, dude, tell me. Weight Watchers kind of was, you know, diplomatic and just said, well, it's always been about behavior change. And we are also adding in this extra prong. We are adding the GLP-1s, which is the biology prong. We have ignored biology. They almost apologized, right? They almost apologized to the people being like, we didn't have it totally right to begin with. And, you know, they said, well, we're about community, education, and care. And we are a weight health care program now. And like, that was pretty short.
I think that she's the only one that got like a super direct question and gave a super direct answer.
Yes.
In that. And yeah, if they can marry the goods of what was their previous thing with the medication, I think that that's great. But it seems like for a lot of people, I don't know, maybe that community would be helpful, because you still end up having questions about the medication and how you're doing on it. And everybody wants to compare themselves to somebody else that's on it. And so I guess it could still create a different kind of community.
Right. Yeah. And I would rather people be in a community where there's like a dietitian overseeing this or a doctor overseeing this versus being on Reddit, like just reading whatever people are talking about. I don't know. So then the next question, we're talking about side effects. They said only 17% of patients quit. So that it's not that 17 quit from the side effects. And, you know, this was one of those questions that really got kind of like diverted or glossed over. And they just were like, it's so rare. Like, it's just so rare. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Thyroid cancer, super rare. But like all the other like major side effects, you know, that are not rare. The very heavy nausea and potentially vomiting feeling, not rare, very, very common. Some of those side effects are common in most people that take it, and they just kind of gloss over. And I'm looking at that lady, I'm like, you've never taken this drug, I guarantee that. And so you don't know what that feels like to inject something and then have a wave of nausea come over you that you're just like, you just barf. Yeah. Or you get gastritis from having the delayed of emptying gastric, or if you overeat a little bit, you throw up. Like, those are all side effects that affect people and how they feel taking the medication. And so I felt like she really, it's almost like medical gaslighting, which people are so good at doing.
Yeah.
On symptoms. It's like, okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know if she said this, but I've heard this from other medical professionals where they're just talking about, well, what are these side effects versus like a side effect of, you know, dying from obesity or whatever. And they're like, oh, you just got to measure, you know, weigh them out, which is true to some degree. But she sounded really defensive to me. And maybe that's just my own bias showing through. But I was like, I don't know about that. And so then for more clout, they brought out the like, I don't remember if they were like vice presidents or just like head drug reps or whatever for Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, you know, which are two of the biggest companies that are selling these kinds of drugs. And they got asked directly, it was Novo Nordisk that got asked directly, like, so what was it like? in the offices of the drug rep companies when you guys realized that these drugs were making an effective impact on people? And she just jumped into like, well, we've been saying for 20 years now that obesity is a disease. And that was kind of her answer, which is not really an answer to the question at all. You know, so I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And then the Eli Lilly, she asked, well, then why is it so hard to get a hold of? Like, why is coverage such a problem? And, you know, she just said it's complex. That was the answer. Like, it's complicated. Like, okay.
Oh, because when there was the shortage, is that what you're talking about?
Well, like, yeah, but also the fact that insurance is not covering it for weight loss. They're like, well, if weight loss is a disease, why can't we get this covered by insurance? And she just said, it's complicated. And that was the answer. I was like, cool.
So, yeah, and like I know somebody who's on one, and because he's type 1 and not type 2, they're going to stop covering it. Which insurance companies did for the continuous glucose monitors. If you weren't type 1, they weren't going to cover the continuous glucose monitor. And so, like, it was just like they're doing a lot of things, yet record profits.
Yeah, it's like a 40, was it 40 billion? I think the number from 2020, like pre-pandemic times, was in the millions, and now it's in the billions as far as profits go from these medications.
No, I just meant like insurance companies.
Oh, insurance companies. Well, but yeah, but that's what I don't understand is, don't insurance companies make money when they cover some of this? So I'm just, maybe it is really complicated. I would love for someone to explain this to me. If you're an insurance provider, please reach out. And that was it. It was like, okay, well, we're going to wrap this up. And Oprah basically said, look, if you're happy in your bigger body, please be happy and bless you. And if you are happy taking the drug, great. And if you don't want to take the drug, also great. Like, that's not shame and blame, which we fully agree. And like, we're not here to tell you take it or don't take it. I mean, if you are a client, we will have an in-depth discussion with you on some of these things. But even with those clients, we're not like, you should definitely do this or you should definitely not. It is purely 100% a personal decision. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Oprah kind of ended it with this like kumbaya vibe, but I was like, I just watched a commercial for GLP-1s.
Yeah, that's how it felt. And then the commercials in between were all related to either the medicine or like Weight Watchers or some other weight loss thing. So it was all kind of one big commercial.
Yeah. So, I mean, just knowing what we know now about diet culture and all of the other winning methods at the time, right? It's like, I wish I could take a time machine, if I could, 10 years ahead to look back and be like, is this the thing? Or like, what will we discover? I'm ready to know already.
Oh, like, will it continue to
do
well, or will we end up finding something terrible out?
Correct. Like, I still am skeptical on that front, just because so far nothing has ever really been great.
Yeah, you know? I think the thing that we'll see is that the people that did it to lose a little bit of weight, it won't be sustainable for them to stay on it. But I think potentially the people that really were struggling with a lot of the signaling, and it was very multiple hormone related, that it will be effective. But, you know, will people want to stay on something like this for the rest of their life? That's the challenge, I think.
Well, especially if you're paying out of pocket. I mean, you're just adding, that's like your retirement fund now goes towards this, or how are people?
Well, in 10 years, they'll lose the patent. So it'll be generic. And there will be one that, I think that's how it works. Is it 20 years? There's like a year number on when the patent is available for a generic to come in.
Or what happens when it stops working? Because you think about people, they start at this low dose and you keep raising the dose. What happens when you're maxed out on dose and you're plateaued? Like, what do you do for the rest of your life? Is that, this is just it?
I don't know. I think that's, I don't know. I have no idea.
We still have so many questions to answer on this topic, which is why we keep bringing it up and we keep talking about it, because it's like really the biggest conversation out there when it comes to health and weight loss, unfortunately. Or fortunately.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm just like, ugh.
And then I'm like, where do we start? It's like, okay, there's this revolution for weight loss, but where's the revolution for our environment and our food supply and the options that we have to take care of our health outside of weight.
That's what I've been asking for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So keep, you'll just keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah. Come try. Oh, it reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen it, but the CEO of, I think Kellogg, went on a news segment about how people are struggling to afford food. And he was like, well, cereal as dinner is a very affordable option.
Yeah, he got reamed by the clean food department
for that. It's just, it's like,
and rightly so, rightly so.
Yeah, he makes like, what, $6 million a year. And he's like, you should eat some cereal. I'm like, yeah, what? Okay.
Yeah.
But cereal's price is going up because, or they're same price, less amount. It depends on the brand, but shrinkflation, things like that. So it's just, it's happening across the board where it's like, they just keep, again, they keep selling us that this free market capitalism thing is the ticket and how it works. And it's like, it's not working. It's only working for about 20 people, and the rest of us are all suffering.
Yeah, and it's tough because I definitely, I mean, I remember I did a speech in high school about like freedom of choice, you know, and I don't want there to be a ton of government overreach because I think there can be some weird stuff that comes along with that too. But there has to be some accountability for companies who are pushing literal poison. Like, we did it with cigarettes, right? Like, we don't advertise cigarettes on kids' TV shows, right? Yeah. And like, why are we advertising some of these foods or candies or whatever to children? There's just certain things that I think definitely can shift that we're not doing. And it's like, it's literal crime. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. We allow all these preservatives and things in our food versus what other countries do not. Now, let's just start there.
Yeah. I actually just saw, did I send that to you? The thing in California? Like, they just outlawed some chemicals, but of course, it's just California. So he's the vampire guy.
Oh, yeah, because he took his son's blood, right? I thought that I had read that when he injected his son's blood in him, that not much changed. But based on that post, he said that a lot changed. I thought that was confusing.
Yeah, I don't know. If y'all don't know what we're talking about, so Brian Johnson, he does this crazy thing where like, what? So he took blood from his dad and put it in his, did they swap blood?
No, he took his son's blood because his son
is younger. Then he took his son's blood. They did both. I think he was like mixing it up. Like, I don't know.
To find out what would happen if he put old man blood in him?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh my God, I'm gonna see if I can find this really quick. Oh, here it is. Okay. So his son pulls the plasma out of him, and then he pulls plasma, and then he puts plasma in him. Oh, and then the dad takes out a liter. Oh, so his dad is just also doing it too. So it sounds like, so yeah, so the son is donating plasma to his father and grandfather, I guess, is what is going on here.
Eat cereal for breakfast.
These are our two options. Either have cereal for breakfast or become a vampire and get plasma donations from your children.
And with that, I'm going to go take a nap and just hope that it all goes away by the time I get up.
I sure hope that we gave you something new to think about today and we helped you take one more step on your path to freeing yourself from diet culture. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on Instagram at path_nutrition. We would love to support you on your health or weight loss journey. Come visit us at our online shop where we have a little something for everyone from healthy recipes, meal planning tools, and more. That would be at stan.store/pathnutrition. Go check it out.
Bye, everyone.
Peace.